Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
Guy gets here just in time to hear his own squeak. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. Almost slipped into old time. No, old time is Friday nights. We're just Eerie House Radio today. And I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here with
Dave Bigler from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And Dale, I have an announcement to make.
Uh-oh.
Between our not one, but two shows, between our two shows tonight, we have another visit from Ugg the Caveman.
Oh, boy. Make sure I got my Ugg music. We got to have Ugg come back and share his wisdom and history.
That's right, because it's always important to keep learning and learning about history, because if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. You know,
yeah, that goes for...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that goes for prehistory, too, with Ugg.
Yeah, prehistory, exactly, you know. It's really hard to decipher all those cave paintings to figure some of these things out.
Yeah.
So I just have to make up some of the things that are in between, that's all.
I like him. He's a caveman. Him and I seem to have the same mindset.
Actually, I talked to Gar about this. I'm in making a collection of these stories in little book form. I asked him if he would illustrate it for me. I thought that would be really cool.
Oh, wow. Like a child's
major.
Book? Like a
no,
or like a
No. It's a story of it's a collection of so a historical collection of facts that I made up about how things are invented. By
well, he's got to make Ugg resemble you at least a little bit. You know? I said, wouldn't that be cool? Gar is very talented. You know what I mean? This guy does.
Gar is very talented.
Yeah. Hey, Fogsbane's catching up with all our evil plans that are going around in the background here at Eerie House and with Weirdness Really Bad and Huddle Hutter starring Gar the Ghoul. And he'll be hot at 8 o'clock right after we're finished tonight.
Whenever you do that, I feel like I should reach around and slap you on the back to make sure you get it out okay. You know?
Oh, I might enjoy that.
You might, yeah.
Yeah. That would be great. Dave's going to start treating me and Gar like this.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
And that'll be the end of that, you know?
I don't think so, Charlie. I don't think so.
Slapstick radio. Why not? We've had drive-in radio. Why not slapstick radio?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It may be truer than you think when you listen to Ugg's story tonight.
Uh-oh. Ooh. That's kind of a preemptive little sneak
teaser.
Preview.
It's a teaser. Yes, it is.
It's a teaser for Ugg coming up later tonight. But we do have two more actor radio programs.
We do.
Theater 5 and Suspense.
Yeah, I found an interesting thing, a couple of interesting things about Theater 5. Recently in an article from the old-time radio researchers group, and it's interesting because Theater 5, Dale, was never, you know, everybody thought it was just a throwaway thing, that their attempt to bring back old radio, when it really wasn't that at all. One, it was never really supposed to be a 5 o'clock program. It was supposed to be on at 10 p.m. Because if you listen to many of the – some have some very adult situations and murders and things like that you don't want to do in a 5 o'clock hour. And then they were saying there wasn't much budget for it. Well, they actually allocated ABC allocated about $11,000 per episode.
Ooh.
In the 2 years – And in the 2 years runs of 5 days a week, they never did a repeat.
Nowadays, it doesn't even pay the janitor.
No.
Go ahead.
But in 60, you know, in 64 and 65, that was a pretty good budget for radio.
Yeah, that's a good chunk of change back then.
And then you turn around and the other part of it was is that ABC was using this because they know they needed so much more content for television. They were using it to bring writers in to get them used to writing programs so they could then bring them onto television shows. So it was a training ground for writers as well. So there was multi-use, multi-purpose for it, and none of it was just to bring back old-time radio.
That's what you call maximizing your talent. That way you can
Absolutely.
Pick the best for the talent pool when you're doing the TV stuff. Hey, Pretty Slick, Snowman James joins us in the chat.
Hey,
along with Hiya, Snowman. Welcome back. Glad to have you here, and you're in time. You haven't missed any of the old-time radio programs, just Dave and I blathering a bit back and forth. But some Dave did give us some great information about Theater 5.
Yep, be there in the archive for you. Plus, you'll be able to hear in between the programs, we will hear the next story of history about an invention by Ugg the Caveman.
Yep, Ugg the Caveman returns right after. And we might as well start with Theater 5, Dave, since you brought us up to speed on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, to say the least, as we continue on our Acting Up weekend.
Mm-hmm. This one's entitled The Big Dog. Is it about Clifford? What?
Could be. It comes to us from... August the 11th of 1960 and for episode
It's not
seven.
A bad place, really, once you've conquered the humiliation. Well, but of course I wouldn't be here at all if it hadn't been for that ghastly dog, that Cerberus at the gates of... Yes, at the gates of hell.
Presents The Big Dog. All right, Leslie, we'll take it once more. Now relax this time, and remember the boom camera's on you till you hold up the bottle. And then we go to a close-up of the pills.
Right you are.
Keep your fingers crossed.
You'll make it this time.
Need better. Those clubs are costing the agency a fortune.
Quiet on the set.
Hold it.
Roll it.
Are you run down at the end of the day? Do you wonder where your pep has gone? Then what you need is Tone. The amazing new product designed to restore your...
Designed to destroy...
Cut!
Good grief.
I'm terribly sorry, John, old boy. These commercials are deadly tongue twisters.
Not deadly enough. Fire him. Get rid of him. Find me an actor who can say his lines, not some has-been.
You fire him. I can't. That's Leslie Adams.
I'll be glad to. I'm sorry, Mr. Adams, but I'm afraid we'll have to call it off. Apparently, you can't remember the lines. We need someone who can.
Mr. Weaver, the man who could remember these lines would have to be part imbecile and part minor bird. I congratulate you on your wisdom in releasing me. I am a dramatic actor, not a pill salesman. Good afternoon.
Leslie, wait a minute.
I'd like to thank you, John, for your understanding, to commiserate with you on our mutual employer.
Let's try it once more, shall we?
I'm sorry, John. He's through here.
Let's not perpetuate this polyglot.
I know you'll get it right the next time.
There won't be a next time.
Our single point of agreement. Good afternoon.
Listen, Weaver.
Now, Leslie, let's make a good exit. No matter who calls you back, don't turn. The scene is ended. Head high, Leslie.
One more take if you leave him alone.
I'm glad you did that, Leslie. No man who has played Bernard Shaw should concern himself with the small intestines.
Oh, down, please. Thank you.
6 weeks. 6 weeks in Hollywood, and Leslie Adams is forced into a commercial. Well, a man's got to make a living.
What's happened to my memory? 64 isn't old. Why can't I retain the lines? Oh, it must be this cold I've got. It's got to be, simply got to be the cold. The money's gone. Where will I go? The actor's home? If only I could get through to that nephew of mine.
Well, Bonnyface Walter, how's the hostel tonight? A welter of mail and messages?
Slow, Mr. Adams. No calls for you.
Nothing from Alex Kendall?
Not a thing. Leslie! Oh, how nice to see you again.
Jamie! Here for a film?
Oh, just 3 weeks. Are they keeping you busy?
Oh, you know, the round of television. That nephew of mine won't let me rest.
Oh, yes, Alex is doing well, isn't he?
Oh, yes, and gone completely Hollywood, you know. Even his wife's got a secretary to handle their social life. Incredible place, isn't it? But I may escape it yet. Miller wants me back in his new play.
Oh, Broadway? I envy you.
As a matter of fact, Jamie, there's a young man in it you might play. Shall I put in a word with Gilbert?
Well, that's always home, you
then
know.
Then it's done. See you tomorrow.
Good night.
I know it's none of my business, but is he that important on Broadway?
Does he owe you a bill?
As a matter of fact,
I'll cover it. And the answer to your question is yes. Or it used to be.
Well, he'd better go back. He hasn't worked since he moved in.
His memory's shot. There's nothing for him to go back to.
Hold it, buddy. Who are you? What are you doing here?
I'm Leslie Adams.
And
I'm not a tourist from Boise. I'm here to see my nephew who's directing on this set.
Sorry, orders are the stage is closed.
Don't argue with him, Leslie. The man's too young to remember who you are.
They ought to be breaking for the day soon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll wait outside.
Well, the days are pretty here. The weather, that is. The rest is like a visit to the dentist. It goes well enough until the grill strikes. Leslie Adams soliciting Alex Kendall. The world turns, doesn't it? But it's only work I want, not charity. If he and Marcia would only invite me to one of those parties they give, they ask the right people, men who could give me work. Yes, they're coming out now, the actors. There is a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. What happened to my tide, my fortune? Alex was directing amateur minstrels when I played opposite Joan Crawford here. Did he leave word to put me out? Oh, come, Leslie, you're neurotic about this memory thing. It's a cold, that's all. The actor's home won't get you yet. Oh, but how the rent keeps spiraling. The banks have had it, Leslie. You're cashed out for money. An actor needs his dignity. What is he but the face he can wear? Oh, there he is. There's Alex.
Hello, Alex,
now, make it casual. Don't seem to need him too much.
Alex Kendall, imagine meeting you here.
Leslie Adams. How are you, Uncle Les?
Well, this is a pleasant surprise. Oh, I was just on my way out of John Huston's office.
Oh, you got a show with him?
Well, he wants me in that Roman epic with all the spears and chariots. That film will look like a hardware convention. Everybody rattling around like pots.
Oh, you're a funny man, Uncle Les. You should have been a stand-up comic.
I should have been a comic?
Oh, I didn't mean to offend you. You could have been a great success.
I have been a great success.
Oh, yes, you have. I've been meaning to call you, Les, every day for a month now.
I wrote you where I was staying.
I know. I've just been working so hard. They've got me directing so much TV, I'm beginning to feel like a traffic cop.
That busy, eh?
Yeah, it's killing me. You?
Yes, it's killing me, too. Not the work, the lack of it.
Oh, I'm busy enough.
Les, I'm sorry. I've got to run.
Shall we see each other?
I hope so.
When?
Well, look, Marcia's giving one of those she parties next Saturday. You always hated that kind of thing. I don't suppose you'd like to come.
Well, that is poker night with Freddie March.
Oh, too bad. Another time?
Oh, what am I saying? Oh, dear. Yeah, he's going to be in New York this weekend.
And we can look for you?
Well, if Houston doesn't hold me up.
Oh, it's Black Tyler.
Thank you, Walter. Nice of you to bring it up from the tailor.
That's a beautiful jacket, Mr. Adams.
Yes, it should be. It was cut by the tailor to the Prince of Wales while I was in London playing in Maytime. White for dinner was new then. The Prince and I made a vogue of it. This thing cost me £45.
Oh, worth it, I'd say. The way it fits. Makes you look like a prince yourself.
Thank you, Walter. Take this for your trouble.
Oh, no, that's too much.
A discerning man should be recognized. Take it, I insist, as a token of a special occasion. This is a turning point in my life, Walter. The comeback. Hollywood, twice taken. Sound the trumpet for Leslie Adams.
All hail Caesar.
And crown his head with laurel for the march of triumph tonight.
There you go, part one of Theater 5.
Yeah, well, some of us are pretty quick on here with only a 20 to 22 minute show without commercials. So, yeah.
Well, we'll have plenty of time for Ugg and who knows, maybe even more special surprises.
Yep. An actor who can't remember his lines. That would be like me.
Stop.
Yep. Give me that cue card. Hey, where's the teleprompter? Somebody help.
I've encountered people who have had difficulty grasping what we were doing as guests on my show when I was doing it in Amherst. But that's all right. Cue cards are good. Cue cards are good because there's no mistake what needs to be said.
Yeah, I was, and we have gone from cue cards to teleprompter. I'm very, very pleased with that. Not for the sketches. Usually when you sketches, we just do them, you know, one at a time and run through it and go. The only person really has trouble is the main character in that particular one, like Holly and the at the airports and so it's psychiatrists and people like that, you know. So
yeah, it depends how much dialogue.
Right. I mean, let's face it, these things are without the opening and closing of the music, most of these sketches are like 50 seconds, you know. So
yeah.
And one person has half of those lines. So it's, for individual sketches, it's not that bad. But when we do the hosting, like we're about to do in another week and a half here, going on location again, we'll use a teleprompter, and that really helps because you place it right under the camera, so when you are reading it, you're looking right at the camera.
And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Well, depending on who's looking.
Yep.
Oh, my. But this is an interesting little tale we got going here.
It is an interesting little tale. You know, some of these stories are okay, but some of these stories have been a little underrated. So I'm really glad that we have so many of these to pick through and sort through and bring everyone here at Erie House Radio.
Well, Dave, I'll tell you what. You've enlightened me and opened my eyes to a whole new world of entertainment with these radio programs. It's been over 6 years of Erie House Oldie Timey Radio, along with Erie House Radio.
Yeah, it's been quite the interesting ride, and I think we got a couple of years left in us anyway, huh?
We're going to give it a shot. There's still a whole lot of radio to play.
Yeah.
A whole lot that we have not yet touched upon. Other than the annual look at War of the Worlds come October 30th annually to mark the anniversary. We really haven't repeated anything. Maybe a couple of stories, but not from the same exact shows.
Right. Yes. Yeah, because some of the stories, because when you're presented in a different light, like we'll have one coming up in our time travel weekend that we've shared before, but we shared it from SF68, and this time it'll be from Bradbury 13. And although it's the same story, it's not quite the same story. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the fun of what we've got is a ton of variety to share. So we hopefully can keep doing this for a long time, and we're grateful for the regulars, Fogsbane, good old Bob, and now Snowman James. Thank you for being with us. Golly gosh, I'm so emotional. I'm going to have to run right over to the conclusion of The Big Dog.
There you are, driver. Keep the change.
What is it about giving a big tip that makes a man feel confident? Well, there it is, Leslie. The Kendall Menage. An imposing pile of rock, isn't it? Beautiful, too, in a grandish kind of way. If I remember Marcia, she's a little grandish, too. She must hire a battery of gardeners to keep the grounds as well. Well, that's perfect. They've got themselves a dog. Not just any dog, mind you, but a Dane. Listen, not just any Dane, but a Harlequin, for heaven's sake, cavorting in the sprinkler like something out of DeMille.
Now, just stay where you are, boy. The Prince's tailor wouldn't approve of you. No, down, boy. Stop shaking. Go on. You're muddy.
For a man who loathes animals, he's extremely fond of me. Alex should keep him chained when there are guests. Well, Leslie, it's time to storm the castle, to carve a new career in those television films of his. It's not such a bad little medium, and you could bring quality to it.
Good evening. I'm Leslie Adams.
Oh, Mr. Adams, there you are. I was just passing the door. The other guests are in the drawing room. Please come in.
Well, how nice to see you again. I have... No, boy.
Down.
Get
down.
Oh, dear.
Oh, look what he's done. Mud all over my dress.
Oh, what a shame. And he's darted off. Is there anything I can do?
Thank you, no. If you'll introduce yourself to the other guests, I'll just go and change. Alex was held up at the studio. He may not be able to make it. Excuse me.
Certainly.
Oh, what an incredible performance. He's ruined her perfectly beautiful dress, and she's still going to let him stalk the house like the Hound of the Baskervilles. Well, that's Hollywood. Oh, great Jupiter, here he comes again like a wounded boar.
No. Down, boy, down. Stay away from my jacket. Stop licking my hand. I have no desire to establish a friendship with you. Oh, and will you, for heaven's sake, stop following me? You make me nervous in this jacket. Oh, here, boy. Here, come. Now, let's try the patio, shall we? There. Out you go. Good riddance. Yes, and don't fall in the pool. The displacement would be a disaster.
Why did she call me Mr. Adams? That was chilly of her. What a shame Alex isn't here. I thought I might borrow the rent from him. What? Borrow? Oh, certainly not. All you want is a job, and Alex can give you one. No one stop worrying about the memory thing. The scenes are so short in film, there'll be no problem at all. All right, Leslie. Pick yourself a producer and get yourself a job.
Oh, is that a martini? Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, Mr. Delbert, as I was saying, your series is without question the most superior in television today.
Well, thank you very much.
No, I mean it. It's adult, imaginative, creatively conceived. Any serious artist should feel privileged to appear in it. I know I would, and I turned down Park by the score. Now, go away, boy. Go away.
That dog is crazy about you, isn't he?
Yes, he seems to be.
Say, do you suppose they'd mind if I put him out again? Come on, boy, come on. I'll be back, Mr. Velvet. Yes. I think I can be of help to you. Now, listen, you moon-eyed minotaur. You're not going to wreck my chances. I'm here on serious business. I've got to talk to these people, especially to Alex's wife. I can't have you fawning on me while I work. So, out you go. Out, do you hear me? Out. Go on, out.
Oh, heavens, here comes Marcia. Did she see me do that to him? I don't think she likes me anyway. All right, Leslie, charm her. She can persuade Alex to give you work. Talk about her house, her garden, her dog. Tell her she's beautiful. Alex can help you. And Lord, how you need it. Oh, what a way to live. You revolt me, Leslie Adams, soliciting these people like some beggar in the street. Well, what else can I do? Go to the actor's home.
Oh, Marcia, Marcia. You know, if I'd known you'd wear such a dress as that, I wouldn't have been so stricken. Petucci, isn't it? Or Marley Parnes?
No, it was done by one of Alex's designers.
Yeah, that's another talent of Alex's, finding the right people. A designer, an actor, a wife. He's unerring. He's perfect.
He was married once before.
Well, one works toward perfection, you know.
Ah.
Oh, I saw that show of his last Tuesday. Brilliant.
Oh, it was good, wasn't it?
I've been a director, too, you know. I see the inspirational touches. Alex has a transcendent talent for dramatic grouping, like Goya.
Oh, do you think so, too? Oh, please sit down and tell me about it.
Oh, for the love of Jupiter, is he back in?
Oh, dear, and covered with mud again. I do
No,
wish
boy,
he...
down, down. Get off that sofa, you idiot. Get off. There. Well, I hope you'll forgive me, Marcia, but it did seem wrong, you know, for that dog to sprawl on a velvet love seat.
Yes, didn't it? Excuse me, Mr. Adams. I must see how dinner is coming along.
Dear saints in heaven, I've offended her, slapping that canine pachyderm. Well, there's no time to waste. I'll get to work on Delbert again. You need a job, Leslie, in a series. You need a lot of ransom to stay out of that actor's home.
And that, said Schubert with a leer, is why we close our alley once a year.
Oh, Leslie, you're irresistible, isn't he, Marcia?
Oh, yes, indeed he is.
Good boy, Leslie. You've really made an impression on Delbert. I'm sure you can get work with him. Now, if you can warm Marcia up. Oh, thank goodness they put out that dog for dinner. Oh, squab. I love that. What's that? Oh, by George, there he is again, scratching at that patio door and lolling his tongue out at me. I don't really like animals. What's he moon-eyeing at me for?
Oh, thank you. I'll have two of them.
Doesn't she see him? It's disgraceful what she lets that dog do. Why doesn't she send him away? Oh, there he is. Well, is she just going to sit there? Everybody's embarrassed by that beast. Don't look at me, boy. Stay away. Oh, no. Here he comes. Right under the table beside me. Why does she look at me that way? Can I help it if her fiendish dog has picked me out? Get away, boy. Get away. Get away. Stop slobbering on my jacket. I'll be a mess. Give me a chance, boy. I've got a lifetime to save tonight. Where's my dignity if you slobber all over me?
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Delbert. Men of your perception are rare in television. You and Alex are rare. I said to Marcia, Alex ought to work for Delbert exclusively. That's where the quality lies.
Well, I consider myself...
Stop it, boy. Stop it. Get away from the jacket.
He does prefer your material.
Lord, how will I ever stand up? And if I can get this food down to him, maybe he'll stop drooling on me. Careful, Leslie. Don't let them see you do it. Just ease the plate down to him. Maybe he'll stay off the jacket. Hungry as I am, that's more important now. Act as though you dropped something and get it down to the floor. There you are, boy. Oh, that fool dog has knocked it out of my hand. Well, don't stare at me. If you'd put the beast out in the first place, this never would have happened. He's ruined my life, filthied my jacket, deprived me of work, stolen my dignity. What chance have I now?
Mr. Adams, I didn't mind about my dress. I didn't mind about the muddy sofa. But perhaps it would be better if the cook were to feed you both in the kitchen, if you insist on bringing your dog to my party.
It's not a bad place, the actor's home, once you've conquered the humiliation. And there's one splendid thing about the home. No dogs allowed.
Theater 5 has presented The Big Dog, written by Richard McCracken and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, John Griggs, Vicky Bola, Ralph Camargo, Guy Sorrell, George Petrie, Bob Hastings, and Marty Myers. Audio engineer Neil Pulse.
Marty Myers?
Sound technician Ed Blaney. Script editor Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastatsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Edward A. Byron. We invite and would appreciate your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking.
What's he wanted?
This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
Is he one of the famous boys? I don't know.
No. No.
Oh, okay.
No. He wasn't seen
yet.
Too bad.
It's a shame.
He was a famous boy, but he wasn't one of the seven little boys.
No. All right. That's what I was wondering. Later, when he became a big boy.
He did. Yeah. He got to be a really big boy. He did.
Yeah. We got a moral for this one?
Well, yeah, why not?
All right, let's go ahead and give that a shot. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. If you don't like dogs, you deserve to be in the actor's home. That's it.
That's right. You could have been nice to the dog, and everything would have been all right.
Yep.
I wouldn't have to go kick him in the pants either, you know? Be mean to a dog around me.
That's right.
That's what's going to happen.
Dude. So that was interesting. That was not her dog?
No, it turned out it wasn't. He was surprised, and it was like, oh, jeez. She thought it was his dog.
Yep. Mm. Amazing. Amazing.
Amazing. Well, I guess
you know what
maybe...
Also was
is it that time to turn back the hands of time?
It is that time.
All right. Take it away, Ugg.
Well, many people believe that the occupation of courtesan is the world's oldest profession. Look it up yourself. This is a family show. That belief does not hold true, at least the third or fourth oldest profession, if you want to be honest about it. The world's oldest profession, from my research, was that of fire starter. Long before Benjamin Franklin flew a kite in a lightning storm, cave clans were sticking individuals who showed no signs of any skills out on a big rock whenever a lightning storm arrived. Usually, this act ended in pneumonia, but upon occasion, a lucky caveman would become electrified by being struck by lightning. And then, by touching loose bark chips, he would be able to start the bark chips burning and thus start a fire. And the fire starter would go from cave to cave, starting fires as long as his body held the electricity. Now, the professional fire starter all but died out around 3500 BC when ancient Egyptians created a form of the matchstick and completely died out in 1827 when English chemist and part owner of an Arthur Treacher's fish and chips franchise, John Walker, invented the first friction strike matchstick. It is here where the world's second oldest profession came about because of the greatest inventor of all time, Og the Caveman. There was no acting back in Og's days, even though there was no radio, television, or TikTok to entertain them. There was still an entertainment back then. At night, many cave clans that weren't at war with each other would gather together at night by the big bonfire, which was created by the fire starter, and would watch as cavemen and cavewomen would stand on a slightly elevated rock and smack each other with small logs or sticks, thus creating the first slap hit or slapstick comedy routines, which everyone would take great enjoyment from, except those getting hit. Those performing these slap hit programs every night would be plagued with bruises, broken limbs, and concussions, and soon no one would be willing to perform in the slap hit routines, and the art of slapstick was dying out, leaving only the only entertainment of caveman sticking his head inside a saber-toothed tiger's mouth, an entertainment that died much faster than the slapstick. With nothing left for entertainment and to keep the clans from warring, a committee of injured and concussed cave slap hit people came to Og the caveman as a last attempt to save their entertainment. But instead of saving it, Og would create the world's second oldest profession, that of acting. It was Og that discovered if someone were to take a stick and pretend to hit them hard, but not, and the person who was being hit would pretend to overreact by falling backward or forward, no one would be the wiser or seriously injured. The cave crowd believed that the performers were actually being hit hard, and the cave songs would roar in laughter. Their joy would mean that there would be no cave clan war that day. After all, how can you go to war with someone you would just laugh with? By teaching this technique, Og created a group of slap hit or slapstick, as it were, troop. With much practice, a few headbutts and the pretend eye gouges added, they soon added a Sunday matinee. And as the crowd sizes grew larger, the cave people would throw sparking stones upon their slightly elevated rocks to show their appreciation, which turned their slapstick performance from a hobby into a profession, the world's second oldest profession. Now, throughout history, acting and stage performances from the Roman theater to William Shakespeare to Ted Healy in the Stooges. No one has ever given credit to the one person that created it all, but now you know how it all began. With Og the Caveman, the greatest inventor of all time. There you go.
Now you know the rest of the story. There you go.
That's a lot of well-researched stuff I made up. Yeah.
Well-researched stuff you made up. I like that.
Right.
Very well.
Yes.
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Well, we got time for...
to make that up.
Time well spent. Time well spent, in my humble opinion.
Okay.
It was. Go Og.
We still have some time, and then we should have some extra time as well.
Yeah. We got time for a radio program and some more fun. Let's get to our next program from Suspense. Now, I like this one's title right away, Actor's Blood.
Yes. And Bela Lugosi wasn't even in this one. Yeah.
I should have been. But he wasn't.
This was... Oh, okay. What?
Nope. That's all.
I was just gonna
there
say,
ain't no mo.
This is episode number 106 from August 24th of 1940 and 4.
Now, Roma Wines presents...
Foster Brooks!
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
Suspense! Tonight, Actor's Blood, written and told to us by Ben Hecht and starring Frederick March. Suspense is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you
Suspense. This is the man in black here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to raise the curtain on a presentation unique in these weekly half hours of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you a star of the first magnitude, Mr. Frederick March. And in person, one of America's foremost tellers of tales, Mr. Ben Hecht of Broadway and Hollywood, who will appear as actor and narrator in a suspense play dealing with the mysterious death and the twisted passions and loyalties of the world behind the footlights. And so with actor's blood and with the performance of Frederick March, supported by Ben Hecht, from whom we will hear the narrative in the author's own words, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Do you remember Maurice Tilliou? Probably not. Only students of the theater or people old enough to have applauded the heyday of Mrs. Leslie Carter and John Drew and the theatrical didos of the Divine Sarah would be likely to remember. During the years I knew him, I saw him in harness but three times. Once in a revival, once at a benefit, and the third time was the occasion of the anecdote I've set out to relate. By that time, his only claim to fame was the fact that he was the father of Marcia Tilliou. On a summer night in 1927, Marcia made a final exit worthy of the Tilliou tradition. For weeks after it happened, old Tilliou went around like the Ancient Mariner, holding with his baleful eye and his mournful song whoever crossed upon his path. But after a while, he too seemed to drop out of sight in the wake of his glamorous daughter, and like her, was forgotten. Then late one night, as I was getting ready for bed, the bells of my apartment rang.
Ben, I come with a message from the dead.
Indeed. Well, come on in and tell me about it.
Ben, do you believe in ghosts?
I've got nothing against them.
Good. I have just come from a miserable modern dress caricature of that greatest of the bard plays, Macbeth. You will scarcely credit what these upstarts have done to Shakespeare's masterpiece.
They haven't altered the text, have they?
You recall the fourth scene of the third act?
Oh, yes. The scene in which Banquo's ghost appears.
Just so. In the folio edition of the play, the stage directions clearly read, "The ghost of Banquo enters and sits in Macbeth's place." In the foul production which I have just witnessed, the ghost does no such thing. It is an empty chair to which Macbeth shrieks his guilty line, "Thou canst not say I did it. Never shake thy gory locks at me."
An invisible ghost, eh? That's not so illogical.
Yeah, but what drama is there in it? How can we feel Macbeth's terror if it's an empty stool at which he shouts, "Avaunt and quit my sight! Let the earth hide thee! Thy bones are marrowless! Thy blood is cold! Thou hast no speculation in those eyes which thou dost glare with!"
The way you read those lines there, I have no trouble seeing this ghost.
Thank you. Now listen. I am going to produce that scene in modern dress. It's not going to be an namby-pamby production such as the one I witnessed tonight. I am going to give a banquet at my home, and there is going to be a place set at the table for my daughter, Marcia.
Look, Maurice, I'm very fond of you,
You are wondering why, aren't you, my boy? Like Hamlet, I am but mad north-northwest. The empty place at the table will be purely symbolic, I assure you. And no apparitions will appear, not to you and me at any rate. I cannot guarantee what my daughter's murderer will see there.
Marsh's murderer will be there?
They will all be there. All who loved her, all who hated her. And woe to the hand that shed this costly blood.
But if you know who the murderer is, why don't you tell the police?
Ah, the police? My daughter, sir, would not have wanted so crude and sordid an epilogue to her life story. Like her father before her and my parents before me, she had actor's blood in her veins. She shall be avenged, my friend. But it will be no affair of handcuffs and policemen. I'll not go whining on Marsha's behalf among the cigar butts and cuspidors in some precinct station. No, no. Her murderer shall be unmasked at a mighty banquet. On Friday next, at 8:30, curtain time, my friend. I'll see you there.
Yes, yes, I'll be there.
With Ben Hecht in person as the narrator of his own story, and with Frederick March as star, you have heard the prologue to Actor's Blood, tonight's tale of suspense.
And now, in this brief intermission, let us picture a scene beneath a radiant Caribbean moon at the fashionable Hotel Nacional de Cuba in Havana. An American dinner guest has just raised his glass in a toast to Havana, its traditions, its beauty, the superb dinner, and wine. His Cuban host replies, true, the traditions, the scenery, and the food you enjoy, they are Cuban. But the wine of which you speak so highly, that is of your country. It is the famed Roma wine made in your own California. Yes, it may surprise you that California produces Roma wines of such uniformly superb quality that they are imported by many foreign countries. But millions of Americans do know and enjoy the excellence of Roma wines daily with meals and when entertaining. These millions have made Roma America's largest selling wines. They know, too, that Roma wines are amazingly inexpensive, only pennies a glass, for wines of such distinguished character. That's because here in America, you pay no high import duty, no expensive shipping charges for Roma. Wines that combine age-old winemaking skill with modern testing and quality control. So ask for R-O-M-A, Roma wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
And now it is with pleasure that we bring back to our soundstage Mr. Ben Hecht, narrator and author of Actor's Blood, starring Frederick March, tonight's tale of suspense.
It rained on that Friday night. Thunder rolled in the sky. And the streets were full of that picnic-like confusion which storm brings to the city. Waiting under the hotel awning for a taxi, I turned over in my mind the strange invitation that had brought me out into this wild and stormy night. I was rather thrilled at the prospect of old Tillyhue's dinner, for his intention was plain, to assemble a company of suspects in the murder of his daughter, Marcia, and he was obviously going to climax the evening by some formal accusation of guilt. I knew pretty well who the suspects were, and I suppose I was one of them. Alfred O'Shea would be there, of course. Alfred O'Shea. The man who had written Marcia Tillyhue's first successful play and their last. Broadway had its own private joke about the title of the last. It was called Forgotten Lady. It was after the final curtain of the last performance of Forgotten Lady that Alfred O'Shea chose to tell her. Marcia told the story at the time as a joke on herself.
Hello, Marcia.
Oh, why, darling, you waited for me in my dressing room. Like old times, I'm touched, really touched.
Look, sweetheart, you're off stage now, so cut the Bernhardt. You know why I'm here.
I do.
All right, I'll say it again. I'll say it for the last time. I want a divorce. I want to marry Rena Krasnov.
I want to marry Rena Krasnov. Oh, it's such a bad line. And from such a great playwright. No, dear Alfred. Not for her. It'd be too belittling a successor. Can't you see, darling, after all we've been to each other, it's... Why, it's like Pygmalion wanting to trade in his beautiful Galatea for a wooden Indian.
Then it's no dice, eh?
No dice, Alfred. No divorce. Not as long as I live. Now, be a darling and help me out of this dress.
Okay, Marcia, you've just made your own bargain.
You can come out from behind that screen now, Father.
How did you know I was there?
Your asthma, darling. I'm glad you're here, even if you are a perfectly fiendish old eavesdropper. Here, you can unhook me since that swine refused.
I warned you against marrying that jackanapes of a playwright, Marcia.
Oh, Father, you're saying I told you so. What I really wanted was to weep on your shoulder. Ouch!
I'm sorry. Look here, Marcia. What are you going to do about this career of
now,
yours?
Now, darling, please don't go into that old routine about my being the last scion of the royal family of the American theater. I'm nothing but a combination of your name and a playwright who specializes in shallow, brittle female leads that enable me to get applause by simply acting
Marcia,
myself.
Marcia, I won't allow you to speak this way about yourself. You're a great artist.
Oh.
You've taken your place in the great tradition of the stage beside the immortal figures of Rachel, Siddons, Bernhardt, and Modjeska. Marcia, let O'Shea go. He was never worthy of you. Play Juliet next season. Show them you don't need a fashionable playwright and tailor-made parts to succeed. Show them you have actor's blood.
Actor's blood? Actor's blood? I'm sick of hearing about it. Just because you and Mother thought it was cute to stick me out there behind the footlights at the age of 5. Because you never had any real life. You didn't see any reason why your daughter should have. I'm supposed to have actor's blood.
All right. I'm only thinking of you, Marcia. Only of you. But that O'Shea is a hot-headed Irishman. He came very near to threatening your life when you refused to do as he asked.
Good. I wish he would kill me. I'm sick of the whole rotten business.
Yes, O'Shea was a suspect. He would be at old Tillyhue's dinner. He would be seated across the table from the empty chair. And would he see a Banquo's ghost of Marcia Tillyhue? But O'Shea would be in a goodly company of suspects. Fritz von Klauber would be there for sure. Fritz von Klauber. Not a man I should have liked to have as an enemy, that. Abnormally sensitive to insult, von Klauber was possessed also of an impenetrable Prussian stupidity. His first American production was a play called Jubilee for Spring, and Marcia Tillyhue starred in it. It was the most sensational flop of the Broadway season. After the first night performance in the 21 Club, Marcia held her own private autopsy on von Klauber's dead turkey.
You see, darlings, Mr. von Klauber, my esteemed producer, loves his turkey farm so much, he sometimes forgets he's on Broadway.
Terrific, Marcia. How about that for my column?
Sure, Walter. Anything at all, it's all yours.
Marcia, yes. Shh. Von Klauber. He's over there at the next table. He's heard every word.
Good. Let him hear. He's going to hear from me in the morning anyway when I start looking for a new producer.
Go ahead, my sweet Marcia. Go ahead. Rag me in public. I could kill you for this. Do you hear me? I could kill you.
Oh, you could, darling. Well, if my beloved husband doesn't do me in as he keeps threatening to do, perhaps I'll ask you to oblige. I may yet be spared the nuisance of doing the job myself.
Marcia, I forbid you to talk like this.
Sorry, Father. Must be the actor's blood cropping up again.
Yes, von Klauber would surely be present at Tillyhue's ghostly dinner. As I got into the taxi and gave the driver Tillyhue's address, my mind was still turning upon the terrible question, who killed Marcia Tillyhue? Third on my list of suspects was a character named Maury Stein. Maury Stein. A one-time racing tout and small-time gangster Maury turned his brilliant, if slightly frightening, talent to flesh peddling. That is to say, he was a theatrical agent. Marcia did two shows under his management, both of them flops. It wasn't her fault. There was no belittlement of the name Tilliou. It was still an electric sign, but growing ghostly, slipping still aglow into the side streets of fame. Maury Stein was Marcia Tilliou's last substitute for love.
Maury, will you stop staring at that door?
Let's get out of here.
Oh, relax. This is a charming room. I like it here.
Look, chick, I said let's get out of here. Understand?
Perfectly. I understand that Mrs. Maury Stein may come walking in that door. Perhaps she'll put two and two together about us. That'd make you sad, wouldn't it? Because you've signed over all your unscrupulously earned money to your good wife. Oh, just in case questions should be asked, you know. And if she gets any ideas, she may cut you off without a dime. And then...
Shut up!
You know, I've half a mind
to... Did you hear what I said? Shut up! Give us so much as that... pick up your coat. We're gone.
Maury, you are a worm. A despicable, slimy little worm.
Sister, nobody talks to Maury Stein like that and gets away with it, see? Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody talks to Murray that way.
I can talk to Murray that way, because, but he can't hear me. That's why I can talk to him that way.
Ah, all right. Well, okay. You're quite courageous, Dave.
Yes.
from a distance, but still. that's good.
I guess the father's all worried about the acting legacy the family has, and she ain't worried so much.
Nah. It's not top of her priorities.
Yep. Interesting story going on. Very much of a day, or actually more of a stage type thing where, you know, there were a lot more parties and stuff, I think, than there seemed to be today in Hollywood. I don't know that everybody smoozes around with everybody like they used to. I mean, when you look on Facebook, Dale, and you see all these old pictures of the actors, they're just hanging out together and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they really do that a lot today.
They don't like each other either.
Probably not. Probably not.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think that's all I'm going to say about that.
That's right. Yep.
But I feel refreshed suddenly.
good.
Yes, I feel refreshed. And I don't know why.
A sprinkle a day keeps on my mind. Sorry.
Yeah, we got that. Let's
Have
wrap
you
up.
Had your sprinkle today? Yeah,
before the show, I feel fine now. Actors' blood from suspense. Let's wrap up this noir-type story.
There was to be one more opening night in Marcia Tilliou's career. And ironically enough, the three men she had caused to fear most of all her enemies were doing the honors. O'Shea had written it, Von Klauber was the producer, and Maury Stein had put up the money. I arrived backstage at the Broadhurst at 8:20 to find the three of them in hysterics. 10 minutes to curtain time and no Marcia. I found old Tilliou sitting in a dressing room nursing a sprained ankle and very upset.
Then I'm worried. For the first time, I'm really worried about Marcia.
What's the matter?
I don't know. We've been calling her hotel since 6 o'clock. She refuses to answer the phone. Ben, go over there. You're the only one she'll listen to. No Tilliou has ever missed a performance, and Marcia, of all people, must not be the first. It's those villains out there who've done this, spreading insidious poison like Iago, tearing at her heart with their fangs until she's afraid to go on. Go, Ben, try to reason with her.
Okay, Pop, I'll do my best to bring her back. I trotted the 3 blocks to Marsh's hotel. The clerk at the desk met me with a deadpan.
Nope, Mr. Heck, Miss Tilliou hasn't come down yet. No key in her box.
I took the elevator up. I turned left and walked down the corridor. I knocked on the door. No answer. Tried the knob. Door opened. And then it all added up. Yes, it added up to a gaudy room in shambles, mirrors smashed, perfume bottles shattered. The portrait of Marcia is Pierrette, cut to ribbons. And finally it added up to Marcia herself, cold and white and terribly beautiful, lying there on the bed with three round bullet holes in a neat triangle just over the heart. There was no mistaking it. Marcia Tilliou was dead, murdered. That was the sum total of the addition I was doing in my head as I rode in a taxi the 20 blocks from my hotel to old Tilio's house on West 84th Street. Maybe I added it up wrong, but I felt sure I hadn't. I was even more certain when I saw old Tilio standing there at the head of the table to greet the guests he had assembled on the promise of revealing the identity of Marcia's murderer. Promptly at 8:30, he made his entrance. He had brought a stranger into the room with him.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for waiting so patiently. I trust you found your mutual company not too tiresome. I should like to introduce my guest of honor. May I present Mr. Carl Schuttler of the District Attorney's Office. Now, if you will all be seated, the place cards are plainly marked. Please, please do not disarrange.
Thank you, Alfred.
Well, I see one short. And who, may I ask, is that empty place for? Banquo's gold?
That, my dear Mr. Van Glauber, is for a beloved guest known to all of you.
Beloved guest, huh? Let's see now. Well, well, hey, listen to this. This seat has indeed been reserved for one known to all of us.
Who is it?
It's been reserved for Marcia Tilliou.
Please, I'd like to change my place.
Come on, sit down, Rita. Marcia was never... She was too sensible to play ghosts.
I am an old actor. With the audience seated and the curtain up, I find it hard to wait. Art is long, but time is fleeting. And there is one who bids me speak. Love, hear thou. How desolate the heart is ever calling, ever unanswered, and the dark rain falling, then as now. You are wondering if I really believe my daughter Marcia is present in this galaxy of her friends. It may be the wandering wits of an old man, but I see her sitting there, tragic and beautiful. About her the sound of rain and of sweet bells jangling out of tune. Forgive me. You have not come here tonight to hear a doting father spread his miseries before you, but for a sterner business, which from your courtesy, your attentiveness, I feel sure you have guessed. Mr. Schuttler asked me to tell him this matter privately, but I refused. For you are all her friends, her honorable friends, and I wanted you present. Who killed my daughter? Who took her life? There's the question. I have the answer. Yes, Mr. Schuttler, the murderer is here. He sits here among us now at my table.
Shall I lock the door now, Mr. Tilliou?
Yes, lock the door. Lock it tight. Leave no chance for escape. Ha ha! It's too late now. No power in heaven or earth can save him.
All right, Mr. Tilliou, the door's locked.
My friends, is this not like a play? Your face is waiting for the name. The name of Iscariot, the Judas. That's it. Clear your throats. Midgets, worms, look about you. Who knows? The villain may be right beside you. And who knows but that you may be his next victim.
Mr. Tilly...
I keep my promise, Mr. Schuttler. I have the proofs, all of them. Enough to send the murderer from this table to the gallows. The one who killed Marcia is looking at me now.
Ah, the blood on his hands. The terror in his eyes. I'll tell you his name. His name is...
Let me go!
Not that! A knife!
Oh, my God!
Billy,
where are you?
He's killing me!
A dagger handle protruded from old Tilliou's crimson shirt front. His eyes were closed. We carried him into the next room and waited outside while the doctor worked over him.
Mr. Heck?
I'm Ben Heck, doctor.
Oh. Will you come in, please? He's asking for you.
Doctor, is he...
The knife pierced the heart. He hasn't much longer.
Ben... Ben, is that you, Ben?
Yes, it's me. Who did it?
Lean over so I can see your face.
There, satisfied? Let me fill out of my pocket.
Wait. What is that?
Why, it's a letter. I must have stuck it into the pocket of this suit the last time I wore it.
Wait, what's in that letter, Ben?
Why, I don't know. I haven't even opened it.
Oh, that's Marshall's handwriting. A letter from the dead. Open it, Ben. Read it to me.
Look, you mustn't excite yourself.
When was that letter mailed?
It's postmarked the 10th. It must have been the day before...
Read the letter, Ben.
All right.
What does it say, Ben? Read it.
It says, Dear Ben, this is to remind you of the opening at the Broadhurst tonight. I hope you will be there because... I sincerely believe that this is one of the greatest roles I have ever played, and I'm so anxious to make good in it because of Father's faith in me.
She cared. She really cared. What I thought.
Sure she did. She'd have been proud of your performance in there this evening, too, Pop. You were great.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Doctor.
Oh, yes, what? Oh. Well, that's that. He was quite an actor in his day, wasn't he?
Yes, quite an actor.
How is he doing? What did he say? Did he say anything?
He's dead. I've got a letter here that will explain everything. It's a pity I didn't find it sooner. I haven't had this dinner suit on since the night of Marsh's opening. It fell out of my pocket when I leaned over the bed in there. It was written by Marcia Tilliou the day she died. It says, Ben, I'm bored, tired, hurt, sick, full of nasty things. I'd stay a while longer, but death seems easier and simpler than life. What are a few pills more or less to one who has swallowed so much? Take care of Father. He liked you the best for the last time, Marcia.
Suicide. A suicide note. But what about the bullets?
Can't you guess? The old man worshipped her. She was his star. But stars don't commit suicide. Only failures do that. So he fired 3 bullets into her dead body, slashed the painting, and wrecked the place to make it look like a crime of passion.
He must have been mad as a hatter.
No, he was sane. I think he really saw her as murdered by all of us. Her so-called friends who had let her down when she needed them most. You realize that old barnstormer was playing his death scene from the moment he came into this room tonight? He'd rehearsed it in his bedroom for days, sharpening away at Macbeth's old toad stabber. He had his lines down pat. He staged his elaborate scene this evening and killed himself in such a way that we'd all be raked over the coals, not only for Marsh's murder, but for his own as well.
Well, it was a lovely piece of old-fashioned miming, but as fruitless of drama as I ever had the misfortune to witness.
You're right, O'Shea. The plot was full of holes. We could have helped him a lot with the construction, but it was a great last night.
show closes Actor's Blood, written and narrated by Ben Hecht and starring Frederick March. Tonight's study in Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear.
Have you discovered, as thousands have, how much Roma wines add to the enjoyment of your meals? How their superb flavor makes special occasion feasts out of everyday meals? Well, find out for yourself. Start off the meal with that delightful appetizer, Roma California Sherry. Then place on the table a well-chilled bottle of Roma California Table Wine. Delicate Sauternes, hearty Burgundy, or tart, tasty Claret. You'll be amazed at the tremendous difference Roma wine makes in the enjoyment of your foods. Don't overlook this easy, inexpensive way to add thrilling, extra enjoyment of everyday living. Remember, Roma wines cost only pennies a glass. Take a tip from the millions who enjoy Roma wines at meals when entertaining. Ask for R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, America's largest selling wines. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Mr. Brian Donlevy, a star of Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
California! Get in the chopper! Oh, sorry. That was Actor's Blood from California. Wine.
California. Yes. Yep, yeah. Yep.
Well, maybe we've learned something. I don't know. Let's find out. Because I got nothing. Erie House Radio proudly presents Agarless. Moral of the story. Hi, CW. Chad.
Nothing's funny for me. Hey, apologies, Degar. Hey, it's better to sometimes better to just give the divorce than not worth killing yourself over. That's all I have. Now I gotta get out the end of something and hand wipes again. Say.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes staying is like killing yourself. But anyway.
Oh, hey, did you realize something, Dale? This month, a couple weeks ago, marked the 50th anniversary of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
I'll be darned. Oh, my gosh. And the Silver Age just makes us feel older and older and older and older and older.
Yep.
And infinitum. Yeah. It's and there's a lot of them left, too. That
there are a
one
lot of
program.
Them left.
There
yeah.
are a lot available.
And a lot that are scheduled.
Yes, we'll try to get to all of them. If we live that long. There's quite a few. And we, with all the other stuff we mix in, you can bet there's years and years of entertainment left in Erie House, we think.
Maybe not in us, but in Erie House, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Was there ever any entertainment in us? We're not sure. If so, we should let it out.
We should. It'll explode if we don't, yeah.
Let it breathe a little, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of time left, so that means more fun stuff.
Lots of fun stuff there.
And one of the fun things we do here is the Wheel O'Radio.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, you're closer to it, and I'm feeling a little lazy, so why don't
okay.
you take care of that today, Dale?
That'll be the day when you're lazy.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Oh, good God.
They gave away a jail in Harvard, Nebraska for the person who bought the largest bond.
Oh, I see.
He's quick, isn't he? Well, everyone was bidding 1,000 and 2,000 and 5,000.
Yeah, and you know, I ain't a guy for keeping my mouth shut.
Well, Charlie ended up by buying the biggest bond in the place, which naturally I had to pay for.
Tell him about it.
Yeah. So, I'm making it Charlie's job to operate that jail at a profit now.
And don't worry, I'm working it out, too.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
That's why I invited Humphrey Bogart over tonight.
Oh.
We got an angle.
You have an angle.
Oh, Mr. Bogart.
Hello, small fry. Met me, pal.
Huh?
Pump the palm.
Oh. Yeah. Now, about this jail, I've been doing some thinking.
Oh, you have? Well, I have, too. Now, look, see?
Yeah?
We'll make it a high-class joint, see?
Yeah.
And cater to a more refined class of crooks, see?
Oh, see.
We won't even call it a jail. We'll give it a handle like the Greystone Plaza.
That's good. Or handcuffed arms. We can even have a theme song.
Yeah, sure we could. You mean something like, jail, the gang's all here.
I like it.
You like that, huh?
Yeah, nice fights you got, too. Either that song or we could use When the Stool Pigeons Come Back to Capistrano. I'll come home and be a jailbird with you.
Now you're talking. And we'll advertise it as the only jail with duplex cells.
Yeah, we can even put in a bath for dirty crooks.
I don't think that'll work, Charlie.
Well, why not?
A real crook never comes clean. Too many thieves in that.
Yeah, there's much in what you say there.
Yeah, this stuff you suggest is okay, but do you think it's enough?
Well, maybe we should get some outstanding criminal to give the place a bad name, huh?
Hey, that's a great idea. Who should we get?
Well, let's see.
Some friend of mine.
What am I thinking? Humphrey Bogart, of course.
Oh, gee, do you really think so, Charlie?
Yeah. Certainly. Why, when it comes to a really low down despicable snake in the grass, you're the lowest down, as crooked as rat there is. You're really a rat, yeah.
Oh, thank you. I try.
Yeah.
But wait a minute, Charlie. How do I know I like it? For instance, how's the food? You serve meals in bed?
Yeah, sure. We give you a bunk breakfast, bunk lunch.
And what about dinner?
Well, that ain't so hot either.
Yeah, well, I don't know about this.
Once a week, we'll flip you a cake with a hacksaw in it. That's nice.
So I can cut the bars?
No, so you can cut the cake. And we'll even let you pull a jailbreak. Think of the publicity, huh?
Yeah, maybe I'd better. Let's see. I think I'll meditate it over.
Yeah. Well, of course, if you don't want the job, we can always get Mrs. Pruneface, you know. After all, in your last two pictures, you've been on the side of the law, you know.
And what do you mean by that, crack?
Well, you're getting less hissable and more kissable. And for my jail, that's no good.
Well, don't worry about that, Charlie. In my latest picture, I'm plenty tough.
You mean in that picture, Thank You, Lucky Stars?
No, I don't mean Thank You, Lucky Stars.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
It's all right.
Yeah.
I mean conflict.
Okay, pal, okay. How tough are you, in round figures?
Well, for one thing, I bump off my wife.
Uh-huh. Now you're talking sense. That's the Bogart I love. I guess you're still pretty tough, though, huh?
You said it, I'm tough. I'm the number one pinup boy in the post office.
Yeah. That's good, yeah. Well, what I want to know is, are you well known among the bigger clinks, you know?
Am I well known among the bigger clinks, he wants to know. Why, most of the wardens call me by my first number.
Yeah. How about Roz? You usually pack a gat, don't you?
Certainly I pack a gat. I always carry at least two guns.
Two guns? Why two?
One doesn't shoot far enough.
Why don't you carry an automatic?
Hey, that's a good idea. I ought to do that.
Yeah.
Hey, they're pretty fast, huh?
Oh, they're very fast, yeah.
They are.
Yeah, I had one once and it shot off six times before I found out it wasn't loaded.
Oh, golly gee, Charlie, really?
Yeah. Now to get back to your career, did you ever pull a bank job?
Did I? Let me tell you about my job I pulled on the south side.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I walked into the lobby, see, and the bank is crowded with people. And you know what I did?
Stood in line?
No. No. I whips up my Tommy gun and thins out the population.
Oh, you are a ruffian.
Yeah, and just for laughs, I knocks off a couple of guards.
Yeah.
And I started picking up the money.
Yeah.
I fills up my front pockets with gold, and I fills my back pockets with silver. I'm running for the door, my pockets loaded with money, and what happens?
Your pants fall down?
No, I run smack into two G-men and a copper. So I shoots the bull.
You certainly do. Yeah, Yes, you certainly do. I'm afraid you're just not the type for my jail, that's all.
Oh, yeah? No. Well, if I turn on the rough stuff, I'll scare any man in the joint.
Yeah? Well, I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to prove that, too. Ori, Mr. Noble, this is a pushover.
What is it, Tom? Oh, boy.
This man wants to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a stick-up, bud. Give me $20 and I want it fast.
Oh, certainly, old chap. You sure that'll be enough?
I don't mind the gab. Give me the money.
I say, though, could you give me any collateral, you know?
Collateral?
Uh-huh.
I'll give you some lead.
Oh. Well, what are they getting for lead nowadays?
This is awful.
Why, you poor dope, I'll take you for a ride.
You will. I'll tell you. Have you got a C-card?
Aren't you afraid, Ray?
No. Should I be?
Oh, this is terrible. I'm disillusioned with you, Bogart.
Oh, gee whiz, Charlie. Hey, this means a lot to me. Please, Mr. Noble, be scared.
Well, frankly, I think you're a very likable fellow.
He thinks I'm a likable fellow. Well, how do you like that? If Warner Brothers ever hears about this, I'm washed up.
That's all, brother. That's all. That's all.
There you go. It's Charlie McCarthy meeting old Humphrey Bogart himself.
Himself, yep. Hey, I got a wooden nickel here. I would like to reach over and put that in the jukebox.
Well, then feel free.
No, I'm not free. It's a wooden nickel. Anyway, yeah, it is. Yeah. He's no joy.
93 KHJ Double Play.
Dale Evans bemoans the manpower shortage with "They're Either Too Young or Too Old." Bemoan, Dale, dear.
Sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. For there is no secret lover.
I'll go so far as to say that.
That the draft board didn't discover.
Well,
pickings are poor and the crop is lean. What good is in the army and what's left will never harm me. They're either too old or too young. So, darling, you'll never get stung. Tomorrow I'll go hiking with an Eagle Scout unless I get a call from Grandpa for a snappy game of chess. I'm finding it easy to stay good as gold. They're either too young or too old. Why, they're either too bald. Or too bold. I'm so tired of getting them told. I will confess to one romance I'm sure you will allow. He tries to serenade me, but his voice is changing now. I've got everything right under control. I'll never, never fail you while you are in Australia or out in the Aleutians or off among the Russians and flying over Egypt. Why, your heart will never be Egypt. And when you get to India, I'll still be what I've been, dear. I've looked the field over and lo and behold, they're either too young or too old. Charlie,
yeah?
That is not the way to get Mr. Bergen to raise your allowance.
Well, we can step out tonight if you got a little money.
You see? They're either too young or too old.
That was Dale Evans, and before that we had Myth Mole. I mean, with a name like Myth Mole, you're going to go far. It's like Morocco Mole, but different.
Probably locked outside the door, too, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Oh, yes. Next week, we ought to do some radio. Oh, yeah.
What kind of radio shall we do?
We're getting attacked by aliens.
Ooh.
We're fighting them back next week. Some X minus one, and then General Mills Adventure Theater. Yeah, and then Saturday CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
That's right.
So
and,
there you
Adventure
go.
Adventure Theater was another program. While Hyman Brown was doing Mystery Theater, he was also did 1 year of the Adventure Radio Theater, which was aimed at. Tweens and teens.
And then we're finally giving in to social pressures. We're having a Queens weekend after that. We're actually having Queens here.
That's kind of queen.
All right. Well, we'll have to figure out what that is. But that'll be the following weekend. Next weekend, we're fighting back the aliens. Same thing.
I have a shameless promotion here. If you go to the Erie House page or my personal webpage, a new video has been posted. Dave Kundago Karma, the only person to beat Mushmouth Mariana in the pizza eating contest, and he did several times.
I thought Chris the dog was the only one that beat him.
No, the dog didn't count because it wasn't human. The bear didn't count either, you know. But anyway, Dave came up with this song, little song ditty he did. And he asked Mike Mason and I to work on it, so we've done a couple of filmings, and Dave came up just a week ago today, called me up with this idea, and we put this together for this first release of several, I'm sure, videos to come.
I've been the beneficiary of getting a sneak preview of it. You've got to check it out. It's very, I thought it was kind of very Reese Stevens-like, so I think you'll get a kick out of it. That's Kundago Karma and Dave Binkley. With an interesting song about, and well, things.
About today.
Stuff.
About today.
Yep. Today. God help us all.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Thank goodness for the pickle.
Can you dig it?
I was wondering what's so funny there.
Wow, timed that perfectly. Amazing. We forgot to tell everybody to get on over to the Twitches, but I think they all know.
Oh, yeah, we didn't do that, did we? I'm sorry.
No,
I just wanted to get a shameless promotion in.
Yep. We're like that. No.
Yes, we are.
There we go. Yeah, so it was fun. Interesting to know we're having queens.
But that's not that kind of queen.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I got a question for you, Dale. What do you got running in your background there? Do you have a heater or something going on?
No.
It kind of sounds like a razor, electric razor.
A razor? No.
An electric razor, yeah.
I have nothing electronic going other than the big desktop computer. It's got a pretty strong fan, but I'd be surprised if you were picking that up.
Well, when you're talking, I don't hear it, but when you stop talking for a second,
yeah,
then it pops right back up again.
I'm not shaving, I promise you.
Oh, now I don't hear it. Now I don't hear it. Oh, man.
I'm hearing things.
And my hearing sucks when I'm hearing things.
Well, who knows? Maybe who knows? But, yeah, Gather Ghoul is just starting out now. What is this? Is he going to show a Monsters? Looks like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I still haven't seen the Rob Zombie version of the Monsters. I want to see it, just out of
curiosity. I'm not that interested except to see Cassandra Peterson do something besides being Elvira.
Yeah, and she has
done a few things. She has, yeah. She's a real estate agent in that particular movie. But other than that, I really don't seem to have a whole lot of interest in seeing his version.
Well, I know that his material is not your speed. You know what I mean. I can only take so much of that stuff. I just like the ones he does that has humor mixed in. It's very dark humor. But, yeah, his stuff is very adult and very exploitative, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's another reason why I'm not in a rush to see it.
Yeah, yeah. But from what I've heard, he doesn't destroy it with all adult theme stuff. You know what I mean? Thankfully. Which is that was my fear when I heard he was involved with the project. I'm like, it's the Monsters. Keep it. You know, they were even more tame than the Addams Family. The Addams Family was they were more geared towards adults.
Yes, they were.
The humor and so forth. But
I agree, yeah.
Gargoyle is kicking off. Hey.
I guess I should tune over there myself and get that on the second screen without him going on, yeah. Let's see.
Oh, now he's showing. Oh, he's showing themes. Now he's showing the theme for the Addams Family. Good man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it looks like we are booked through the middle of February. Looking good.
Actually, we're booked through March. I'm matter of fact, now that you mention that, I'm going to send it to you right this very second.
How about that?
Let's see.
I better close this one so I can save it over. You update the corrections on them, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Good. Cool.
All right.
Get my downloads.
OTR. OTR. There it is again. You know what? It almost sounds like one of those airplanes, model airplanes. Yep,
nope.
Exactly. It's coming through from your end somehow, so.
I don't know what it might be.
There you go. All updated.
Oh, look at that. There it is. Now to drag it over, right over the one I have.
There you go.
It's what I always do. There it is.
I don't think any ones that I added were drug up from before. I think those are all different weekends that I projected. So
cool. I am now viewing the updated schedule. And it is cool.
A lot of surprises, everyone. You're gonna got some great shows coming up.
Oh yeah, I'm looking ahead here. We're in for a lot of fun. This will take us to just shy of St. Patrick's Day. More sci-fi coming your way, kids.
Yep,
lots
yep.
More sci-fi. I thought of something fun to do with that show. Okay, good. All right. I'm scheming a little for a little...
Scheming the promos. My favorite promo that you've done was the picture of Nightmare 20,000 Feet with William Shatner, episode of Twilight Zone, and outside the window where the gremlin is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Star and you and myself. And I actually made that part with the Shatner, you, Gar, and I, the face of my smartwatch. It's really cool. Every time I turn around.
I like making those. Those are good. They are fun.
Yep.
They are very much fun to make, let me tell you, Dave.
I also printed that up and laminated it. I have it here in my office. I look at it all the time. All I have to do is look up at the closet there, and it's right there staring at me.
I have now made 151 different ones.
Wow.
I always post them on the Erie House page first, and then the previous week on my page afterwards.
Uh-huh. There you
go. It's fun doing that, I'll tell you.
They're all fabulous, and I enjoy them so much.
Oh, they're fun to make, Dave. They're so much fun. It's hard. I'm trying to find more and more different pictures I can do different things with. Anywho, we should probably...
Yeah, we should, since we're paying more attention to our computers than we are to...
Yeah, we're going to have pregnant pause there. Not good for radio.
Turn off the house lights. Turn on the three spotlights, so into the middle of the spotlight. Actually, that's how I used to end this TV show, Dale. He would walk into the middle spotlight, and then he would do this.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
What more is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
Sorry, bull, up we the same. And
inka-dinka-doo, yeah.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Good night already!
Where Ellie?
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
Arrivederci! Adios!
Adios, muchachos! Caballeros!
Will you get out of here?